Ahead of Helen Ziller's announcement, or the announcement that Helen Ziller would be the mayoral candidate for Johannesburg, and that came through as expected on the 30th of September, Frans Cronje, who's one of the most astute political commentators in South Africa, suggests that this was, to quote him, the best chess move that he had seen in a long time. He also felt that it had the potential to transform the body politic in South Africa. Helen Ziller is with us this afternoon to update us on how the candidacy is going and how she expects she'll win it. Helen, lovely to be with you. Thank you again for joining us on over the weekend. I guess you're spending a lot more time in Joburg now.
Yes, I'm here in Joburg today. My throat's a bit raspy. It was the 94.7 today, so lots of traffic on the road. And I'm really loving being back in Joburg.
94.7? You didn't ride, I presume.
I didn't ride.
I guess a lot of people are still commenting on that 94.7 breakfast show with Anele interview. How did you feel that went?
Well, you know, I don't accept people being race grifters and playing the race card all the time. I was there to talk about the future of Johannesburg. I was there to listen to the questions of the listeners. And she just wanted to poke me all the time on race, which had nothing to do with the issue. It's the reason that Johannesburg is now in the state it's in, this constant obsession with identity issues rather than service delivery issues. And I've had enough of that. And my candidacy says, enough already.
Let's just go back a little into the history of Joburg, because up until the 2016 elections, it was a very safe ANC majority. And then in 2016, the ANC lost its majority, and there was a deal that you did with the EFF.
Because I was so opposed to it. It was when I was taken off the federal executive because I opposed it like anything.
Okay. And Herman Mashaba became mayor. And then when you became the federal executive chair, was it a coincidence that he resigned at that point?
I'll tell you what happened. He's building up all kinds of conspiracies around it. But what specifically happened was this. The ANC was bringing a motion of no confidence into Herman Mashaba. By that stage, Herman had alienated members of his own caucus to such an extent that they spontaneously and autonomously came to me and said, Helen, if there's a motion of no confidence in Herman, we can't vote for him. He has abandoned our caucus. He is in the EFF's caucus far more than he is in our caucus, and he is not a leader of our caucus, and nor does he ever take us into his confidence. So I certainly didn't encourage nobody to vote against the DA mayor. I would never have done such a thing. But when Herman saw the writing on the wall that he'd lost the confidence of his own caucus, and that if only a few tipped over to the ANC side, he would lose his majority, that's when he resigned.
So for those who weren't around at the time or hadn't followed it that closely, the DA, with its partners, was able to tack together a majority with the support of the EFF. The EFF, I think, had 30 seats. So you needed 136 votes. You got them with the EFF support against the ANC. Would you ever, given how that all turned out, would you ever go into partnership with the EFF again?
Well, I was dead against it at the time, Alec. I remember when it came up at a federal executive and I said, no, we can't possibly do this. They're our arch opponents. They share none of our values. And values translate into policies and practice. We cannot do this. And I was in the tiny minority on the federal executive. And that's when Musi had me removed off the federal executive in 2016, when I opposed the deal with the EFF. And the deal with the EFF proved, in fact, to be fatal, because what subsequently happened was that Herman had to keep accommodating the EFF in all kinds of ways in order to stay the mayor. Because once the EFF has voted for you to be the mayor, they're going to demand their pound of flesh, and they demand their 2 pounds of flesh. And it's a permanent extortion racket, because every time a vote comes up, they demand another pound of flesh. Entirely predictably, what I said would happen. And I'm not trying to be a know-it-all. It's exactly what I argued in the federal executive, and it did turn out to be that way.
In 2021, so we go 5 years ago, or nearly 5 years ago, at the last election, then Herman Mashaba's got his own party now called Action SA. He gets 44 seats out of the 270 that were available. And the DA comes back from 104 seats to 71. So clearly he must have had an impact or had some members of the public who decided to switch from the DA to him.
Yes, he'd had a very big impact as mayor because he'd had huge amounts of publicity. And the media loved him and they built him up. And I think slowly the veneer comes off. I mean, I always say you can hide who you are for some of the time, but not all of the time. And so that's why we've been seeing the veneer coming off gradually and then quickly, I'm afraid. It's just a fact of life. I've had many people in the city telling me now exactly what happened in the deal with the EFF and how effectively, as I understand it from insiders, Herman effectively gave city power to the EFF. And when you look at it today, in the red by 16 billion rand, even more, a massive debtors book, a huge maintenance backlog, just extraordinary. And that rot started then.
What do you mean he gave city power? Exactly what's going on? Unpack that for us.
Well, it happens in interesting ways through the appointment process. Now, the appointment process goes through several layers, but the number of reports I've had about how those layers are manipulated is quite scary, even to the point of people being threatened not to arrive for the interview if they go against what the majority wants. That didn't happen in this case, as far as I know. But what did happen in this case was that the EFF favored a particular candidate to be the CEO of City Power. And the old City Power CEO was maneuvered out by a settlement, which I understand Herman later announced as a dismissal, which it wasn't. And then through a process of a candidate selection process, three names were passed up to the mayoral committee. And then with heavy support from Herman, the person that the EFF favored got the position. So it's complex. It's not easy. These things are strategized around very, very carefully. But if you scratch the surface, you will find who's connected to what and how things go about. You just have to get your guy on the shortlist. You just have to get your person kicked up top. And then you basically can be assured of the outcome if the top guy pushes for your person. And that's what happened.
All right. So Herman is now part, or his party that he created is now part of the governing coalition in Johannesburg. It hasn't turned out well by all accounts. Is this why you're doing what many thought at the time was a great surprise, to put up your hand and say, well, I'll go back to Joburg. I'll go back to where I grew up and where I was born and take over as mayor and fix it?
Well, I know what it takes to succeed the ANC in government. I've done so twice, one in Cape Town, one in the Western Cape. It's enormously difficult and challenging. And if I found Cape Town and the Western Cape challenging, well, Joburg is 10 times more so. And you need somebody with hair on their teeth. You need somebody with a lot of experience in dealing with corruption. You need somebody who knows how the internal systems work. You need somebody who understands the legislation. And we have to get coalitions in Gauteng right. We absolutely have to get them right. And we have to have governance in Gauteng that gets right. And I wanted to do one last major challenging thing in my career. And I thought this is the thing to do.
But you've had a long and successful career. Have you had many tilting at windmills? Because I suppose, unless you get the ANC supporting you, this would appear to be a bit of a windmill that you're having a go at.
No, not at all. I mean, our polling is very encouraging at the moment. In Swanee, our polling is especially encouraging, and ditto Ekurhuleni. So it looks as if Gauteng is moving very, very nicely in the correct direction, in the direction of voting for service delivery. And that's a huge step in South Africa's history.
My question more was, when you enter an election, do you do so with a strong understood confidence that you will win, you personally, Helen Zille?
Well, you certainly try to win. You don't go in to lose. And we've announced our mayoral candidates a year ahead so that they can go in and fight for a full year, visit every ward, speak to every residents association they can get the contact details of, speak to every civil society organization, go around the city, region by region, ward by ward, listening to people primarily and taking advice on board, finalizing the plan and then implementing the plan. And that is what I'm doing right now. It's an enormous challenge. I've just been working all day today. It's a Sunday. I had long meetings, very productive meetings in Region F1 and F2, which are some of the most challenging parts of the city. And I really learned a lot.
So how are you going to win? You're on the ground, you're seeing people, but there's got to be something more to take you from 71 seats to 136, or at least, if not 136, then close enough with your allies to get to 136.
Well, it's very simple if you look at the numbers, but it's very difficult to do in practice. In the last municipal election in 2021, the DA got 26%. If every single person who voted DA then brings just one other person to the polls who did not vote DA then, we get an overall majority. Just one more, each person who voted DA. That can't be too hard. Many people in the leafy suburbs had been taken in by Herman Mashaba and voted for him last time. I don't think many are going to do so this time. That's one mechanism. But the most important mechanism is the turnout mechanism. In the last election, there was a 47% average turnout. Now, that's pathetic. And if we had simply pushed up our turnout out to just 57% in the DA strongholds, we would have got 35 more seats. 35 more seats if we'd just pushed up our turnout 10% to a level which is still pretty low at 57%, I think. Now, there's even a clearer method. If we can push our turnout out to 70%, then we get 119 seats, and then we're cooking with gas. But why don't people turn out in the election? I mean, we do a lot of polling, as you know, Alec, and when we do polling, we always ask the voter intention and whether they will turn out on election day. And that is where the ANC always soars ahead. Will you turn out on election day? The ANC supporters are determined to turn out on election day. For some reason, when we factor turnout intention into the statistics, the DA vote goes backwards. And I've been trying to work this out for a long time. And as I say, I've been talking to many people in this while that I've been in Johannesburg. And I think I've hit on the reason. When I speak to people and say, why don't you go out and vote? They say to me, well, because we live in a safe DA ward and our councillor will win anyway. And then I say to them, you don't understand how the voting system works. In a local government election, you have two votes. Let that sink in. You have two votes, one for the ward and the other for the proportional list. So if you don't rock up and your councillor wins anyway, you haven't voted on the proportional list. So we've lost that vote. But what people specifically don't know is that your ward vote counts twice. Now, let me explain that to you. Johannesburg is divided into a whole lot of wards. different councillors from different parties stand in all the wards, and the one that comes first in the ward contestation becomes the ward councillor. Then, because you've got a proportional system, you also vote for the list. And the list votes are added together with the ward votes to get the total proportion for each party. So, after the ward votes are counted and parties have their different councillors that win in that ward in position, those ward votes are taken again and are added to the PR votes to get the total proportion. So every person who doesn't vote, because they believe their ward councillor is going to win anyway, so they don't have to, actually is robbing us of three votes. So every person who doesn't vote robs us of three votes. That's the only number they have to remember. And if we could push the DA turnout up to 70%, we're really off to the races. And that's what we have to try and do. We will obviously also work very hard on converting voters of other parties that you do in every single election campaign. So we're going to work very hard on that. But if DA voters are too apathetic to come out because they think their ward councillor is going to win again anyway, then they clearly don't understand the system. When you vote for your ward councillor, that is one vote. When you vote for the list, that is the second vote. Then all the ward votes are added together to the list votes, and then the different parties' proportions are worked out, and then the council is topped up so that the final tally is proportional to all the votes that were cast. And I can only explain it that way. People must understand that when they go to the polls, they have two votes, and those two votes end up giving us three votes.
It's a very, very interesting explanation, because I'm sure some people go along to the voting station, especially in the local elections, and they'll vote for their council and then think, well, maybe the second, you know, the second form is for the second party that I like. So if I like the DA and then I actually think that maybe the IFP should come second, I might vote for them there. So there's quite a lot of confusion and probably not enough education on the subject.
There's an incredible amount of confusion, Alec. People have also said to me, you have one vote for your ward councillor. If you like your ward councillor or your candidate, you vote for them. And then my second choice goes on the list. No. All the DA's votes are added together. And if people want the DA to come in to rescue Joburg, because this is Joburg's last chance, they need to turn out in very large numbers and vote DA on both ballots.
I've been watching in the by-elections. You've had some quite spectacular victories in some wards. I think there was one with over 98%. There were a number that have come back in the 90s. So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying now is that when it comes to the local elections, that 98% is not always going to come out, because people would say, well, they don't really need my vote. We're going to win here anyway, not knowing that that second vote on the proportional representation list is that critical. Just explain that. Why have we got proportional representation? What is that all about?
Well, we have opted at the CODESA negotiations for a proportional representation system. And the reason that we did that was because if the winner takes all in a complex plural society, only one party will ever be in government. You'll remember the huge dominance of the ANC at that stage. And if we had constituencies and the ANC could organize the constituencies in ways that they would win 90% of them, then we would have a massively dominant party. We did in any event, but the good thing about proportional representation is it allows opposition parties in with a real chance, because they can get the proportional percentage, maybe not in a ward or in a constituency, but overall a proportional percentage of that sphere of government.
It reminds me of when I was farming in Mooi River, Kendah Nation used to always sit on the Mvufana Council, even though the DA had no chance of ever winning any of the elections. But the reason was there were enough voters there to get him on the proportional representation list. So I suppose
that's
that penny.
That's the crucial point. It's especially visible in small communities. So probably the DA would never, ever have won a single ward there. But because there were a few people in each ward that voted for the DA, together they made enough to get a few seats on the council and they were represented. And that is why we have proportional representation.
But it's a double-edged sword, I presume, from where you're standing, because now you'll have some of the smaller parties will get, as they have in Johannesburg, as it's something like 16 parties are represented there. They get a little bit of votes in many of the wards and they add them up together and they'll get one or two people onto the council and they become kingmakers.
Indeed. And that's why you can see that in every single country where proportional representation works, they have thresholds. So in Germany, if a party can't get 5% of the vote overall in a sphere of government, they don't get any representation at all. You've got to be a serious player, but you're allowed to have some proportion if you're a serious player and not allow the biggest party to consume everything. So in Germany, you have to get 5%, which is high. In Denmark, you have to have 2% to be a serious player. In many, many other countries, they have about 2%. We have proposed 2% in our legislation that is currently before Parliament. We have to get thresholds in. Otherwise, all over the place, when people split their votes amongst all these other tiny parties, you get 10-party coalitions. And once you have a 9-10-party coalition, you can be absolutely sure that you will have musical mayors. You will have a revolving door in the mayor's office, because each one of those tiny parties can decide on some spurious grounds to split their vote and go to the other side. And then they decide, the DA is not giving me what I want, so I'll go to the ANC. And they bring down the government. They bring down the government because they are irritated because they didn't get their way in some issue that is actually irrelevant to governing a city. So if in Nelson Mandela Bay in 2021, where we negotiated a 10-party coalition, which of course didn't survive because it can't, if we'd had thresholds of just 2%, we would have got together with a maximum 3-4-party coalition, and that would have been manageable.
What are the chances of that law or that coming into law before the local elections next year?
Those chances are quite strong, and we're working on it very hard.
I guess it's appropriate in the context of what we've just been discussing, in a practical sense, because today we have ructions in KwaZulu-Natal, in the provincial government there. Can you explain
and that's
exactly what's going on?
Yes, that exemplifies exactly what I've been saying about smaller parties. In KwaZulu-Natal, in last year's election, MK got out of the blocks very fast. They got 45% of the vote in KwaZulu-Natal, followed by IFP, ANC, the DA, and then right at the end, with one seat and one seat only, was the National Freedom Party. Now, there was a dead heat between the EFF and MK on the one side, and on the other side, we made up a coalition of the ANC, the IFP, the DA, and it was a dead heat between the EFF-MK on the one hand and IFP, ANC, DA on the other hand. And the big question was, where will the NFP go? Where will the National Freedom Party go? So a party that got one seat, possibly even on a remainder in the proportional system, could determine whether MK and the EFF were in government or whether the DA and those other parties were in government. So it's completely undemocratic when a single person elected by a tiny party on a fraction of what a seat would actually require then gets to choose whether Jacob Zuma or his opponents get to govern an entire province. And amazingly and with great joy, the NFP person came to us. So it was a coalition of the IFP, the ANC, the DA, and the NFP. And we then had a majority of one. And then I read today that the NFP person now wants to switch to the other side. And it's only a matter of time. That kind of system actually leads to extortion politics, because that person's vote is so valuable that they can put almost any price on it they like. And that opens the door to the politics of extortion and bribery.
And there's nothing you can do about it. If that person, that one seat, switches to the other side, then you get a whole new premier, new MECs, the whole government changes.
The government falls.
Now, does that not put a little bit more urgency into GNU 2.0? And what I mean by that is that you were the architect, or the major architect from the DA side anyway, in getting the government of national unity.
It was a whole team effort, Alec.
Okay, but that process did not follow through to the provinces, excepting in KwaZulu-Natal, which is now unraveled. So other parts of the country, is there not some kind of a focus now to make that happen again? And potentially, looking at your candidacy in Johannesburg and how you're actually going to become mayor without the support, in this sense, of the ANC?
Well, we need a lot of votes. We need every single DA supporter to come out and bring someone else, preferably two or three people, to vote. We need to get the stay-away vote down, and we need to get our turnout into the very high proportions. That is going to be make or break. And with a little bit of luck, we are obviously aiming to win. That's what you do. If we don't, I'm hoping we'll only need a two-party coalition, or maximum three.
But what about the provincial coalitions representing what you're seeing at the government of national unity? I think that many in the country celebrated the government of national unity, thinking that it would trickle down to the provinces. And clearly, where it has in KZN, it's not worked, as we hear today. And in Gauteng, it never trickled down.
Well, I was also leading the negotiations in Gauteng. And the ANC was at its manipulative best. They were terrible in the national negotiations and just ignored everything they signed and everything that we'd agreed the day before. But in Joburg, they really wanted to pull the wool over our eyes, and I wasn't going to accept that in Gauteng when we had the negotiations in Johannesburg, just down the road from where I am now. And I just would not say yes to that. And it was not only me, obviously, it was our leadership in Gauteng. We were in those negotiations and we said, no, we know that you are manipulating us. We know that you are pretending that you're going to do A, B, C, D, and E, but we see right through it because we saw what they were actually intending to do. And we called their bluff and we would not be manipulated into a corner. And I'm very glad we didn't allow ourselves to be.
But the provinces has really not benefited by the continuation of a government that has not been delivering.
Well, it would have been much, much worse if the DA had been captured into a provincial government in which they wanted to give us the agricultural portfolio, something about IT, and some other minor non-existent portfolio with 1.2% of the budget. That's what they wanted to do. They refused to give us education and health, or health, not either one of those two big ones. They wanted to continue with all the tender-rich portfolios so that they could continue to fleece the voters, as we are seeing now in the Tembisa Hospital. And they wanted to palm us off into three tiny little irrelevant portfolios with hardly anything to do and almost no budget. And they did it under false pretenses. I don't have to go into the whole thing now, but they did it under false pretenses. And what was worse, they did not divide the portfolios up as it should have been, which was, let me just try and remember the percentages. Anyway, out of 13 positions, We were supposed to get 9 or 10. They wanted to give us 3 and think that we'd be happy with that. And then they were pretending that they were going to bring on the other parties, which they wouldn't have done if they'd got the DA in, because they would have had an overall majority then. It was pure manipulation, letting the clock run down as they always do, trying to force us in the end. And I said, no, under these circumstances, it's better that we stay in opposition, fight from that position, and instead of being completely captured and laid low and unable to get anything done for our voters in the government, it would have destroyed the DA. And one thing that is totally against South Africa's interests, against Gauteng's interests, against Johannesburg's interests, and the rest of all the metros, is for the DA to go backwards. The deal they wanted to give us in Gauteng would have made the DA go backwards at a very rapid rate, because we would have seen to have sold out.
It's a tough job. It really is. Lots of moving parts, very complicated. But if you talk now to business in Johannesburg, and we've seen lots of semigration, lots of businesses moving away from the richest city in South Africa, what message can you give to them about how you would change things were you to be mayor?
Well, I would first move to stabilize the finances and especially ring fence the finances for utilities. I would make sure I got the Auditor General into my office, as I did when I was Mayor of Cape Town and Premier of the Western Cape, and get the Auditor General to work through her report, her management report, and the entire audit so that I can see where the risk factors are. I would get on top of the budget completely. I would understand the organogram and the employment architecture of the city. I would look at all the duplication that's happening inside the city and in those entities. I would take the best advice on how to streamline the administration and get rid of duplication. I would set up in my office a public-private partnership unit to ensure that we can concession as many of the major services as possible. I would take on board and partner with all the wonderful civil society organizations that are working in every sphere in Johannesburg to fix things. I would end corruption and do whatever it takes to end corruption in the city of Johannesburg. And I know it's a very dangerous undertaking, but that's what my mission would be, and I would make sure that it happened. And I would accept for the first time, comfortably, having protectors. I've had protectors before, of course, but now I will be very comfortable in having protectors, because I can tell you, if you're going to eradicate corruption, you need them in current day South Africa. So that would be my top line plan.
What's the relationship like with Gayton McKenzie? Has that evolved from the unhappiness that we saw at one of the BizNews conferences? Are you, because I see you are now working with the PA in certain councils.
Well, I'm not sure where we're working with the PA, and you probably have some inside information that I don't have. But the important thing to realize is that, you know, Gayton is a folksy, funny guy. He's got a presence. He's got a nice turn of phrase. He understands the Baiza culture, or the Baiza knee culture, the salute culture. I don't have to go into any more details about that culture. A lot of people resonate with it. A lot of people don't. Let me just say that just as Herman's veneer eventually wore off and everyone swam for what he was, or most people swam for what he was, the same thing will happen there.
And you mentioned Herman again. They have a big position in Johannesburg, 44 seats. Are you expecting that that's going to collapse when you go into the election next year?
I'm expecting it to fall back dramatically, yes.
So if you go forward and you, this is your last big swing, if you like, at the pitch. If you don't win, if you can't get enough votes to become the mayor of Johannesburg, what then?
Well, I will assess the situation when we get to that point. If I think the opponents of the DA have put together such a shaky coalition that it's not going to last very long, I will certainly remain in opposition in the Johannesburg City Council and wait for that to collapse to see if we can put together an alternative coalition. That would be one option. On the other hand, if the voters really don't want to rescue Johannesburg, then I can join my husband again.
Back in Cape Town?
Yes.
And your polling, what is that showing at the moment?
Our polling is optimistic, but I never speak about our polling because we have to build up our sample over many, many weeks. And we build into that turnout intention. And one thing I'll be hammering in this election is voter turnout, because it makes such a difference. If we were up 10%, we would have got 35 more seats in turnout. That's just turnout. So it's critically important not to leave our opponents to win the turnout battle, because our voters don't understand how the system works. And that is absolutely critical. And I'll be going around listening, dispelling myths, listening to people's fears and concerns. The five key areas that we'll be looking at to fix is, number one, water. Number two, electricity. Number three, everything to do with roads. Number four, bylaw enforcement. And number five, all the small CBDs across the city that are also going to help and that we need to rescue. So all those five things, we call them our five fixes: water, electricity, roads, bylaw enforcement, which is must be read together with public open spaces, and then CBD rejuvenation. That's what we are going to be focusing on.
And you're going to be focusing on Johannesburg personally, obviously, and you are there now and you're working hard, as you're telling us. But as the outgoing FedEx chair of the DA, what's the plan for the Eastern Cape? And I ask this because the latest data is showing that there's a continuation of people streaming out of the Eastern Cape into the Western Cape, where the DA does govern. And it seems almost like unless you fix the Eastern Cape, the Western Cape will be flooded at some point in time by new arrivals and just be impossible to continue to sustain service delivery there. Maybe I'm being a bit dramatic, but what is your Eastern Cape strategy?
Well, voters must decide whether they want to rescue the Eastern Cape. We've got a strategy to put in place a good government that eradicates corruption, that looks after the finances, that puts into place fit for purpose people, that does all the things that have to be done to turn a province and a city around. But the voters have to want to do it. That's the critical thing. Our polling in Nelson Mandela Bay is looking really, really good. But voters need to understand that if they want to rescue their city, it is up to them.
Have you got the same situation there where DA voters in safe wards have been staying at home?
Yes, we do have that situation in all our safe DA wards. But more problematic in Nelson Mandela Bay was the fact that a large swath of our voting base opted to vote for a whole lot of tiny little parties. For example, the Northern Alliance, for example, the Defenders of the People, with a delightful name of DOP, and all of these other tiny little parties that came up. And that meant that we had to put together a 10-party coalition to get above 51. And every one of those 10 parties, or those other 9 parties, some of which only had one seat in the council, could bring the government down. And of course, it didn't take too long for that to happen. So our voters learned a very hard lesson, which is probably why we're polling so high in Nelson Mandela Bay.
When you look back on your career, because win or lose, and for the next year, you're going to be really focused now on Joburg, how do you want to be remembered?
You know, I don't think much about that. I just want South Africa to be a success. My whole life, I've been interested in how we get the political architecture of South Africa right in a complex plural society, and in a context where very few democracies can succeed. And I've been determined since I was 15 years old. I mean, next year, I will have been at this for 60 years. because I joined the Young Progs when I was 15 years old. So it has been my focus, my understanding of the crucial centrality of this since I became conscious. I read a lot of newspapers as a child. My parents were highly politicized. They used to discuss this. They used to understand it was the political underpinning that would make or break South Africa. And I've been at that ever since. I love this country. I love Johannesburg particularly because I was born and raised and educated here and got my first jobs here. But if we want to rescue South Africa, it's the politics, stupid. Quoting Bill Clinton saying it's the economy, stupid. Well, in our country, it's the politics, stupid. And Bill Clinton could only say it's the economy, stupid, because 3 years earlier, George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson had all said it's the politics, stupid. And they'd got the political framework right on which they could build a great economy. And the institutions are strong enough to survive all kinds of leaders in the United States. We have got very weak institutions. We are building our institutions. And state capture showed us how easily our institutions can be captured by corrupt politicians. They will not survive that in South Africa. Institutions in America are deep and strong enough to survive any kind of leader. So we have to get the basics right in South Africa. And fundamental to that is changing government through the ballot box. And voters have to understand the connection between doing that and their personal circumstances.
Helen Zille is the mayoral candidate for Johannesburg. I'm Alec Hogg, for the Democratic Alliance. And I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.